Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Just like that, second hour is here. Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow. Outkick.com/watch is where you can stream us live and on YouTube. Just search out Outkick, subscribe to the channel, and you can get all the clips, highlights, and more from all of the shows here across the Outkick network. Chad, coming up, just a matter of seconds, we've got On the Bus, Off the Bus. I have been watching a weekly program, believe
have
it or not.
You?
The Jinx Season 2 is back.
Oh, yes. I did watch Season 1.
They're dropping it every Sunday, I think, episode by episode, which you appreciate, I think, instead of just all at once.
Yeah.
Am I right on this? I wish everything was out. I would just binge it all. It's probably, what, 6 or 7 episodes? Not sure. Robert Durst, Season 1, he, you know, there's a big reveal at the end where he's mic'd up as he goes to the restroom after being caught, and he doesn't know he's mic'd up.
He says, like, killed them all.
Yeah.
Of course,
like,
I did it or
you're
something.
You're caught. You know, you had the weird cough or whatever, yeah. And he says, yeah, kill them all, of course, which is shocking and revealing. I don't know why there's a Season 2. I'm sure there's a great reason. I haven't really looked up why they're doing this, but it's good.
You've watched Season 2?
No. I've watched the first 2 episodes of Season 2.
Okay. Is it dropping weekly?
Yeah, every Sunday.
All right.
So it's been really good. And I watched the first episode. It had to do more than just recap what we watched, and it did.
Okay.
So this filmmaker, Jarecki is his last name. They have calls between him and Robert Durst, who just recently died after he was found guilty and was on trial again.
Singing out O.J. Simpson,
it's a fascinating, fascinating story, starting from the very first murder where he admits to doing it, but admits to, like, sawing this guy into pieces, but then he's found not guilty. Just bizarre.
So, and you don't know this because you haven't seen the full series yet, but I've seen the trailers for it and all the promos for it. Is the assumption or what the investigation has found that others were involved? I know it's a lot about, there's a lot more to the story that we didn't know, and we had to dive back into it, but it's pretty juicy when they showed the trailer for it and what's to come on this season.
There's one,
I need to go watch it.
Do you want me to tell you what who else is involved behind the scenes a
yes.
little bit? So he goes on the run.
Because if it's only 2 episodes in, I'm fine to be spoiled with some of that.
Okay, so he goes on the run, right, from law enforcement because he's wanted by L.A. County. And he ends up in New Orleans. And this is – so he had a warrant out. They found him and arrested him the day before the final episode dropped on HBO with that big reveal. And he took off after – it was episode 6, whatever, the episode prior to the season finale. And he takes off because of the cadaver note, where he writes it in a very similar fashion to what the killer, quote unquote, not him, he would say.
Same handwriting.
Sent to law enforcement to find the body. And so he takes off. He ends up in New Orleans. There's a juror from the first trial that helps him clean his hotel room.
Wow.
His condo. That is there on camera helping him clean out the condo as he takes off towards New Orleans.
That is crazy.
Years later, that is bizarre, fascinating, and just, I mean,
yeah, that's a good starting point.
Yes,
launching point of the whole thing.
Yes,
I'm in now.
That's
you
2
sold
episodes
me.
In.
You sold me. I'm in. I'm watching. We'll talk about it another time, but a different docuseries on HBO about Synanon, which was something in the early 60s throughout the mid to late 60s.
Sounds like a planet from Scientology.
It's very Scientology-like. It was basically a group that helped drug addicts kick drugs, dope fiends, people that were into heavy drugs, kick their drug addiction. That became a cult. And it's showing it how it went from something to help people to something that very much hurt people. And
is it holistic
if you show me a series about a cult... That's like a documentary. I'll watch it, and I'm in. And this one's, I think, 4 parts, and I'm into part 2 right now. It's Synanon something, as the subtitle to it. the byline, but I'm watching that right now. But now I got to get into the Jinx season two.
Maybe on this bus ride we're headed with Davey, we'll go to one of the planets of Scientology and meet up with some Thetans.
Davey's also a big fan of cults.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I do Creed. Enjoy the Creed cults. It's time to go on the bus, off the bus.
No.
All cults.
Cults are interesting. I don't.
Davey doesn't discriminate. Any cult.
Those in a cult will never call it a cult, though, Davey.
That's true. I would say a lot of that. They don't realize it. You missed a great conversation before today's show on this subject matter. Yeah.
One we can't take on air.
We can take it on air.
Yeah, it was long winding. I've always said, to quote Creed Bratton, it's a lot more fun to be a member of a cult, but you make a lot more money as a leader. And then also, it's just crazy how all these cults, the leaders just magically have the power to have sex with whoever they want, whenever, and just take as many wives as possible. It's crazy how that always is the case.
This is a legit line from one of these documentaries or somewhere where someone had a famous line who said, isn't it weird that all these people who can talk to God, God tells all these men to take on 15 wives of all different ages? Like, it's weird that God tells all of them to have sex with as many women as possible.
Please turn in your...
And that's how the cult goes. I think it was about Koresh. In fact, someone said that about him. Like, boy, it's weird that God kept telling him to take my wife from me throughout the cult process.
That episode is titled Prima Nocta.
I believe it is, and I'm not to part three yet. There is a funny moment in this cult series I'm watching, though, where it's a woman now who's like in her 70s, probably her late 70s, that survived it. And they're showing all this old footage from the late 60s, and I would best describe these people as a bunch of like hippie San Francisco free love types from the mid to late 60s that got into this cult that were, you know, progressive. And this woman said, you know, I had this beautiful, long, flowing, dark hair at Beverly Hills High School, and I really got into Synanon, and I got there, and we all started shaving our heads. And before I know it, everyone to be in Synanon had to shave their head, and everyone from my high school said, boy, this sounds like a cult. And looking back, they were right. This is like an 80-year-old woman now, looking back on her life. She said, you know, it looking back, it does seem kind of cultish that they forced all of us women to shave our heads when we got there. What? And that's exactly what happened.
So do you think that... Okay. Let's deep dive a little bit, Davey, before we stop.
Fine. We're getting on the bus with cults now.
Do you think that the people who join or willing to be a part of a cult, are they insane? Is it insanity?
No.
That you're willing to sign up for?
I think they just have a vast need in their life that's not being fulfilled.
A vast need to donate money for a private jet for not you, but someone else to use? Or, like, it's not just the sexual undertones of it. It's the monetary... Like the well, all of
not,
the tithing
not all of
that's
them,
involved, yeah, it evolved in
not
this.
All of them take everyone's money,
but even though, but in some way, you're taking something, right?
So this one, like, I think it started okay to where they were legitimately taking in drug addicts, and it got some news coverage of, hey, this is the first treatment program that's worked for big time drug addicts. You need to look into it, and then it became, they called them lifestylers. People who were not drug addicts joined them because they liked their way of life. So then it became people living in big facilities. It's almost like the Scientology centers that are very extravagant in some ways. It looks very similar. But they lived in these big facilities together, and it was almost like a commune. You know, they'd go out and do public service, and they'd do these little odd jobs around town, and then they'd get paid some of it, but they weren't paid. That was their payment to live in these communes, was the work they would do. But they weren't actually giving their own money. They were getting fed. They were getting room and board. They were living with a ton of people, but they just chose that way of life.
And it's also bizarre to me. That's interesting. That you know, if Kyrie Irving wrote a book, he would be the butt of the joke, right?
Yeah.
But L. Ron Hubbard writes a book,
and people believe it like it's the Bible,
where Thetans take over your body after you die in order for the Thetan to be born, and all of a sudden it's a religion. Quote unquote.
Well, I'm amazed at some of the people who end up running these cults. Mm-hmm. The Synanon thing you watch, usually you think of someone as being charismatic, good looking, compelling speaker. This dude looks like a total loser. He's not a great speaker. There's nothing compelling about him. He started this and it did help drug addicts in the beginning, but I'm thinking, why would you ultimately listen to this guy? We got a photo of what it looks like when they're shaving everyone's head. This is in Synanon.
Wow.
This is what we're looking at. It's really, really crazy. when you watch this. And it amazes me, Hutton, because if you're a drug addict and you're on the street, and he's taking on former prostitutes that were out there turning tricks to get drugs, right? Okay, they got nowhere to go. Their life is in shambles. You would go do anything that could help you. So I understand why they join up and try to get the help. But middle school kids from Beverly Hills or upper middle school that leave a protective home to go join this, that's where I am now. Now, that's something that's really nuts.
But
to
Leah
me.
Rimini and Tom Cruise that status doing this, you know, on the opposite end.
Yeah, and I'm talking just specifically about Sinanon. Yeah. But yeah, it's, again, something is missing in your life and you think this is the answer.
You need purpose.
They're searching for an answer.
I mean, like, Chad, I haven't seen this documentary, but a lot of it sounds kind of like a lot of the people that were also in the Manson family. And I mean, they were kind of around the same time as well.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, like cultural revolutions that were taking place during that time play a big factor into this. And kind of just going back to these people are a lot of times also, I mean, they're getting the outcast, the people that just don't have that purpose in life. And I mean, like you were saying, but a lot of these cult leaders are that charismatic character that's able to just to convince you. And a lot of times what happens just kind of looking at this throughout, you know, we'll say like the last 50 years, it doesn't necessarily get the crazy people in at first. It starts off very normal. And then as it starts to really take a life of its own, that's when more of the crazier people kind of become attached. You'll see some of the people that were initially a part of it leave after some of these things start to happen. But over time, it gets, you don't even recognize what it turns into from where it started.
Well, I'm laughing as you're saying this because we're talking about cults and everything, and I'm sure you guys are following the news at Columbia University with all the protests and everyone doing this, like supposedly bastion of academia, right? Columbia in the Ivy League. And how stupid some of these students are and these kids. There is a video that's being circulated around. I saw Outkick retweet it, in fact, where this girl who has locked herself in Hamilton Hall in a protest, is meeting with the media and reporters. And as she has, I mean, trespassed, right? She's unlawfully locking herself in a building she doesn't work in. She is demanding the school bring them food. She said the school needs to bring them food. They've blocked their access to food. And when the reporter says, well, haven't you blocked your access to food considering you've barricaded yourself into this building that doesn't serve food? And watching this girl just completely short circuit her brain where she cannot respond to that question. She has nowhere else to go, just boxed in by the question from reporter is so funny.
If, Chad, I think we're referring to the same person, but this woman, she wouldn't give her name, but it's actually a Johanna King Slutsky. And Jordan Shatnell puts this out there.
Slutsky?
Yes, Slutsky. S-L-U-T-Z-K-Y. But she's a paid instructor and PhD candidate at Columbia. You'll never guess what she's studying.
Journalism.
Theories of the imagination and poetry as interpreted through a Marxian lens.
She's on the Robert Frost course now.
I mean, I would... I would disown my own degree if that was even offered at my university. Like, if that was a course of study. Say that one more time. What's she studying?
Theories of the imagination and poetry as interpreted through a Marxian lens. Now, that's not an actual class, but what it is she was able to pretty much do her doctoral research on a topic, and she managed to get it approved where that's the topic someone signed off on.
That's
about,
a cult.
But like, something about poetry?
We're talking about cults. It all ties in. Like, that class is a cult.
What did you say about poetry?
Theories of the imagination and poetry.
And poetry.
As interpreted through a Marxian lens.
Theories of the imagination. You know what this is? Make-believe. My four-year-old daughter plays this in daycare every single day in preschool. Like, hey, guys, get together and make up your own story. That's what they're teaching at Columbia in the Ivy League. Your PhD is in make-believe. Is what theories of the imagination. Guys, that's a churched-up way of saying make-believe.
Yes.
You made it up. Now you're making this up that you need to be fed while you're barricading yourself.
It's an episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
It's an episode of South Park. Also, an episode of South Park in the waiting.
It should be.
Oh, man. All right. On the bus, off the bus.
I love the deep dive. Yes, where are we headed? Let's come back to Earth here.
Yes.
Bring us back to planet Earth.
The Thetan inside you. Please bring us back.
We're starting in Detroit.
Davey also has his PhD in imaginative studies
and poetry.
From Tennessee in poetry.
I don't know.
Bachelor's in poetry. Bachelor's in poetry.
Cult that started in Detroit off the top of my head. But
I'm sure there's been one.
very likely the
case.
Please
host the rest of the segment, Dave, even with a sonnet, please.
Guys, the draft wrapped up. Looked at the quarterback class because that was the huge takeaway, especially the first round. But for our first on the bus, off the bus topic, three or more of the QBs drafted in 2024 will get a second contract with their current team.
I'm on the bus with this because the second contract check can be as a backup.
With the same team?
With the same team. Where you have to compete. I mean, you've got a spot right now where Caleb Williams should get a second contract.
Yep.
You have Jaden Daniels or Drake May who should get a second contract. Odds are one of the two. And after that, in the first round, one of these guys is going to be a backup for his team.
I'm on the bus, too. I'll go ahead and tell you who I think is going to get it. Michael Penix Jr., because he's not going to play his first year. Maybe his first year and a half. Who knows? With the Falcons, so that clock will get a little better. So he's going to look okay.
And if they're following the Packers model, which they say, to your point, what they did with Jordan Love, they didn't have him on the fifth-year option. They signed him to a one-year contract.
Yeah, so I think he's getting that second contract because of limited time within the first contract play. Caleb Williams is going to get it. I don't think they're going to make the same mistake again. He'll get a second contract.
Unless he wants out.
And I'm going to go with either Jaden Daniels or J.J. McCarthy. Okay. Will be the third. I like McCarthy's situation with that offense and Justin Jefferson in Minnesota, even though I don't love the quarterback. So, yeah, I'm on the bus. I think those three guys, Penix Jr., Caleb Williams, and either Daniels or McCarthy will get that second contract with their current team.
I think it's right at three. I think
you said the over-under would be three or two and a half.
Two and a half.
Yeah, if I had to set it there. But I think three's a good number just simply because – one of these quarterbacks no one's talking about is ultimately, I think, probably going to be like that backup you're discussing, Hutt.
And I then, think so.
I mean, if you're looking at six quarterbacks in the first round, if you can't, like, I know we kind of compare some of these classes and you just look at it like no one hit.
Yeah.
But I just struggle to see two of the six in the first 12 picks not making it to that next stint. I mean, it could even be like a Daniel Jones type situation where it's like he got that second contract, but they don't believe he's their franchise quarterback. So,
yeah.
It's kind of where I'm at.
They would love for him to be back up.
I'm with you.
They paint him like a starter.
We are all on the bus. That
Kirk Cousins could be a backup soon.
Kirk Cousins is going to take someone else's spot on CBS on NFL Today. Next, that's the next quarterback to take a spot on a broadcast seat.
Guys, the next stop does not have any quarterback issues. We're heading down to Kansas City, Missouri. And this revolves around Travis Kelce. You just signed a two-year extension, making him the highest-paid tight end in NFL history. But Travis Kelce will win at least one more Super Bowl before retiring.
Go ahead, Chad.
Look out, James Brown. Kirk Cousins is coming for you next on the set. I'm on the bus. I'm not ever going to go against the Kansas City Chiefs. And Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and Andy Reid. I am a believer in I'll believe it when I see it. You better believe it when it comes to the Chiefs, even struggling on offense for a season, finding a way to figure it out at the right time and to make a run, and they won the Super Bowl this year. Yes, I like the Xavier Worthy pick for the Chiefs. I think they're going to be right back there in the mix. They're going to win one of the next two and continue that dynasty. So, yeah, I'm on the bus. I think Travis Kelce is going to win at least one more.
Yes.
Maybe two.
On the bus. on the bus. Because the Kansas City Chiefs just won a Super Bowl with this wide receiving core. Justin Watson, Marquise Valdez-Scantling, Mecole Hardman.
Kadarius Toney
and Justin Ross. Those were the wide receivers in the Super Bowl. The tight ends, Noah Gray, Blake Bell, and Travis Kelce. Isaiah Pacheco was the running back. Quarterback, Patrick Mahomes.
Hutton,
yes.
They survived a Taylor Swift-sized conflict, distraction throughout the season. And won the Super Bowl. They're right in line. I mean, they are lockstep now. Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift. Now, if they break up, I may have a different answer to this on his production. But as long as Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce are together, yeah, they're going to win another Super Bowl.
Davey, they just won back-to-back Super Bowls without Tyreek Hill. The only thing that would stop, to Chad bringing up Taylor Swift, the only thing that stops this from happening before he retires, before he's done, is if Taylor Swift asks him to retire after next season. That's the only thing.
She's going to get on one knee and ask him to join her on her global tour.
That's the next album, On One Knee.
She's going to get on bended knee like Boys to Men back in the day. And she's going to say, Travis, will you do me the honor of escorting me on my global tour next year?
I'm sure there's another leaving one coming football? Out.
Will you accept this friendship bracelet?
And he will.
With what?
He'll say, I accept this rose.
31 songs on the new album. So, yeah, I'm sure she's got another tour that's going
to
be
I need to hear this
up.
Album, because if it's like Beyonce's country album, these aren't songs. Some of them are like 25-second interludes that they count
like
as a track 2001. Or a song. Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, it's like when Snoop Dogg is pissing at the start of Gin and Juice, right? That's its own track, and then it goes to the track. That's what Taylor Swift does.
I mean, Dre,
I don't know that it was actually Snoop Dogg doing that, now that I think about it.
It could have been,
been a stand-in.
It could have been the producer, you're saying?
Could have been a stand-in. I need to go back and review the tape to hear if that's him audibly enjoying
you're saying like,
the urination.
Well, like on Chronic 2001, track 18 is Pause for Porno. It's a minute and a half.
Yeah, that's what Taylor Swift has. I think she has a Pause for Porno track also on her latest album. I mean, go listen to Beyonce's Cowboy Carter album. I've listened to the whole thing on a drive.
Wow.
And I'm telling you.
Will you listen to it again?
There are songs that's like, it's just her saying something, or it's like a listen in to an old radio station, and it's 17 seconds, and that's a track.
What is she listening to? On the radio station.
It's Willie Nelson in one of them throwing to a different song.
Beer for My Horses?
No. It's like him. Hey, this is country such and such, and now we're going to have a little step back to the, you know, something. And then it goes to another song of hers. And then it's Dolly Parton on one of them. So it's, again, quite 31 full song. Maybe Taylor Swift's album is.
Does it take you back to where, like, you would download a song off LimeWire and there would just be some other DJ that just, like, put his own little, intro on there?
Well, we had this discussion with Cynthia Freeland yesterday. It's like back in the, even going further back, where you'd get a cassette tape and you'd record Casey Kasem's Top 40 or, like, your local Top 10 pop songs, and you'd get the DJ breaking in for the introduction of the next song.
Would have been awesome if Beyonce was listening to Jerry House and the House Foundation from back in the day.
Maybe that's track 72.
The Bob and Tom
on
show.
Her next country album. Who knows? Maybe she'll get Snoop Dogg to come in and make a cameo.
Maybe. Snoop Dogg, I think he stopped in Boulder, Colorado not too long ago.
Oh, yes.
To check out Prime and everything going on with the Buffs.
A city that loves weed. Much like Snoop Dogg.
Gentlemen, we spent a lot of time yesterday discussing Deion and the spring game and kind of where that program is heading, but for this on the bus, off the bus, this will be Deion's last season as the Colorado head coach.
I hope not. I mean, that's going to be a really bad look. If he goes to Colorado and makes all this noise and does that for two seasons and then bolts because his kids are no longer playing for him at Colorado, I'm off the bus with this. I don't think, as critical as I've been of Deion Sanders at times, I wouldn't say critical. I'm not critical of him. As skeptical is a better word, as I am of Deion Sanders. I don't think Deion Sanders would pull this. I think he's going to be there for at least another 3 or 4 years before bolting for something different. And at least one season after his son's not playing quarterback for him, he's going to stay on as Colorado coach. So I'm off the bus.
I'm off the bus, Davey. He's on a 5-year contract now. I think he goes to a bowl game. He could get there. And when he does, he's going to get a big contract extension. He's paid $5.5 million right now per season. I think it's a bump in pay, and I think he stays. I mean, if he doesn't reach the bowl game and he wants to bolt, where does he go, right?
Yeah.
Where does he go without – I mean, the recruiting perception is it's down, and if he doesn't reach the bowl game, how bad was the season? And I also – I mean, I just to flip it, because I don't really think he would do it, because he loves coaching. I think he really enjoys what he's doing. And while he's going to get truly invested in his sons and the next level, especially with Shadur, I think he's going to be truly invested in the spotlight, the limelight, and building up the program, because he dude wants to win, be on top, and then you'll really see the interception return and the touchdown celebration.
I'm with you guys. I think he'll be there after this season. The only thing that gives me a little bit of pause would be, let's say they do get to that bowl game, knowing his kids are gone. I think another program would try to come in and outbid just because they know the publicity that they could get. And I could see if maybe it's a more entertaining spot for him. I could see him leaving Colorado if that's the case.
What's interesting, though, Chad, is to his point, there could be, but like, who jumps in and pays the money that would be necessary for that? Now, it would be steep because, and it should be, Colorado made up on this big investment that they made, what, $280 million investment in Deion. They made that up within the first month of the season last year.
Can I give you the program I think could be a possibility that could have an opening after this year?
Let's hear it.
Arkansas.
Okay.
So
I think Sam Pittman's done after this year, and Arkansas is not afraid to pay. We just saw that with John Calipari. They have the money. He could be in the SEC and bring a lot of momentum and a lot of publicity.
Well, they've already got Bobby P there.
To Arkansas. Yeah, I think that whole thing's going to blow up this year.
Yeah.
Sam Pittman's still the coach, but I'm just throwing that out there right now as if I could see him leaving for a job, it would be something like that in a better conference where he could go test himself more. But first things first, he's got to get to a bowl game. I mean, he's got to do well at Colorado before he even gets an offer like that.
I thought you were going to mention Florida.
Florida's another one where...
Because Florida State didn't go after Deion, and he's didn't he say, like, in the last 2 years or so that he doesn't consider himself a Seminole right now?
I think Florida's...
I'm paraphrasing, but...
Along those lines.
Can you imagine him going to the Gators?
I think Florida's too good for Deion Sanders right now. Now, that could change. But I think right now, Arkansas would make more sense. I don't think Florida... And I don't want to say stoop to that level, because in doing this, we're playing a hypothetical he does well this year.
They did just hire Lafayette's coach, though.
They did, but like that's also the guy that everybody saw. He turned down LSU at Mississippi State and a chance to interview. And I'm thinking he was the hot, you know, guy coming out of the mid-major. So I think I'm not saying that it's legitimate that Florida's too good for him. I'm telling you, I think Florida thinks they're too good for Deion Sanders right now. I don't think that would happen.
They weren't thinking that in October.
You know who doesn't think they're too good for Deion Sanders? Arkansas. That's a program that would say, yeah, bring all the heat our way. We want the Deion heat.
Chad, unlike Cal, Deion, prime, he would call the Hogs.
I don't know. I mean, the dude doesn't even go on recruiting trips.
He would call the Hogs.
He's like, I don't want to upset the other high school coaches around there, recruiting visits.
He would have Lil Wayne there to call the Hogs with him.
Yeah, now he would bring Lil Wayne on to do it for him. I don't know if he'd do it.
Guys, I'll tease our last stop. We'll get to it a little bit later on. We're going to end in Los Angeles, California, because this Sunday is the GROAT, the greatest roast of all time. And save it for later, but the roast of Tom Brady will be a flop.
Do you want to do this, and then we bring in McHenry to give his thoughts on it as well?
Sure.
I'd like to hear Michael on this.
Okay. Set us up for it, Davey.
All right. So talked about it a while back, but Netflix is hosting the greatest roast of all time, and this will be a live taping. Kevin Hart is going to be the roast master.
Good.
But they've got a lot of other big names as far as former teammates of Tom Brady that are going to be in. There was a report yesterday that Bill Belichick is confirmed, but we're looking at guys such as Randy Moss, Julian Edelman, Gronk, and there's even some other names I haven't that they've not released yet. So it's going to be a star-studded cast when it's all said and done.
The roast of Tom Brady will be a flop. I'm off the bus with this. But now I'm answering before Chad because
it's a live event too.
The fact that Kevin Hart is hosting, he's going to say he's on the bus for it. That's my prediction. You mentioned Randy Moss and Edelman. They will crush it. They will crush it with this roast.
I don't think Gronk will, but I agree with you on the first two.
I didn't mention Gronk.
Yeah, I think Gronk's going to look like an idiot.
I think Randy Moss and Edelman will be hilarious. I think Bill Belichick will be too.
Oh, I agree.
And that's why it's and greatest roast of all time plays into the GOAT. I agree with the name just based on playing into Tom Brady. It's not going to be the greatest roast of all time. It will not be a flop. We've seen some flops. This will be funnier than the movie he just put out, which means it's not a flop like that film.
I'm going to break your brain with my
80 for Brady.
With my what I think about this, because you said I would be on the bus that it'll be a flop.
Because of Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart sucks. I shouldn't say he sucks. He's got a huge audience and he makes a lot of money and does a lot. I don't find Kevin Hart to be that funny, personally. Just not my sense of humor. I don't think his part will be good. I think Jeff Ross as the roast master, not the roast master, but one of the roasters who will be there will be great. Whoever the other, if they get Anthony Jeselnik there.
Lisa Lampanelli on there?
To do it, I mean, please. That guy is ruthless and will be hilarious. If Sarah Silverman or someone is there, that'll be funny. Like, the actual professional comedians not named Kevin Hart will crush it. Edelman's going to crush it. Randy Moss is going to be great. I think Bill Belichick will be great. And it is going to get so uncomfortable. with some of these comedians about Giselle.
Oh, and
what they're going to say. If you thought that Antonio Brown was playing blue with his stuff about Giselle and everything, they are going to mercilessly roast Tom Brady about her jiu-jitsu instructor boyfriend that she's with now, about all this other stuff, and it is going to be uncomfortably hilarious. This will not be a dud. I'm all in on this thing. Kevin Hart's going to be the only part of it, I think, that's not
A couple of others that are on. Ben Affleck.
Oh, yeah.
Drew Bledsoe.
Yeah, Drew Bledsoe could be good.
I think
Ben Affleck is going to be like too
now
reverential of Brady. He's going to show too much respect.
Here's also why it's going to be funny. All the jokes don't have to be about Tom Brady. They can be about who's on the dais.
Oh, yeah, they go after everyone there.
And they'll go after Bill Belichick.
And they'll go after Ben Affleck.
And Affleck.
Yeah, it'll be good. That'll be fun.
Now, the live aspect, Davey could be, the other aspect of this could be the live portion of this. It's a flop if they somehow mess up on the live stream.
They didn't mess up the Chris Rock thing. No, they pulled it off pretty well, so I think it's going to be good. We'll get Michael McHenry's thoughts on
Michael McHenry joins us. Fort McHenry. The Fort McHenry on social. Time to talk some Major League Baseball, but first, Fort, your thoughts on this roast of Tom Brady coming up on May 5th?
It would be a sham if it's not good. I mean, there's just so much material, and I'm with you guys. Moss and
Edelman.
Is it Edelman? Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
It'll be hilarious. Both guys will have absolutely no filter. They'll let it all out. And Brady seemed to have a really cool relationship with those guys. And if they have Belichick go up there and tell the truth, it's going to be amazing.
Where's Mike Vrabel? Mike Vrabel needs to be on this roast.
Not a big enough star.
Oh,
what about Peyton Manning?
Peyton Manning would be good. I don't think Vrabel's a big enough. He's not associated enough with Brady. I'm with you, Hutton. He would be good. But, like, people don't associate him with him enough.
But he goes to the Kentucky Derby with Brady.
I know, but, I mean, this is a – look, Netflix has only done one or two live events before. This is one of the first ones. Like, they're going to go – they got Kevin Hart, who I don't think is funny. He's huge. Kevin Hart's a big name to get to be the Roastmaster. Like, they're going big time with this. I mean, even having Edelman there is a bit of a stretch from a celebrity standpoint.
But
– he'll be good.
He'll crush it.
But I'm saying they're it's not just good enough to be good. You got to be a big name. Well, to be on that dais, you got to bring it and be a big time.
But if you're putting this together, Brady's got a say in it. To me, Brady would have Vrabel there.
I don't think so. If Brady wanted Vrabel there, he'd be there. I don't think there's enough.
No, that's why I'm surprised.
Yeah, he doesn't care. Not a big enough name.
Who would be on your dais?
Who would be on my roast?
Yeah.
Well, you guys would be invited. That's for sure.
I'm in.
And to be honest with Brady, like I'd be like, just whoever you want. Why put any restrictions? It's a roast. Let it be. What do you got to hide?
Yeah,
have some fun.
I think you'll have a good sense of humor about
it. I think you will too.
But I think there's gonna be some moments where if you're watching, like, oh, they went there. That's not great. But I mean, there's also Deflategate, and I mean, you go down the list of little controversies throughout his career that they can get into. That's gonna be really good. Also, I don't know if this is good or bad, Michael, but you send me the story. The Minnesota Twins have a home run sausage. Mm-hmm. I love the different home run celebrations with the different teams. I think it's great. A little flair, a little spark to the game. Tell us about the home run sausage and your thoughts on this new tradition.
Well, they're on an 8-game winning streak first off. So I love the home run sausage if I'm playing and I'm winning 8 games in a row. But that's a kosher sausage. That's in a bunch of juices. And that baby's going to pop open at some point.
Oh, wow.
And that's not going to be good. That's not going to be a win. But when you hit 3 homers in the first game, first two guys that hit the homer, one of them actually brought the sausage. And then your veteran first baseman hits a homer and he gets that sausage tossed to him as he's coming to the dugout. That's an epic moment. I mean, you can't draw it up any better. And that sausage is here to live forever. They should bronze it, honestly. It should have a statue out in front of the Twin Stadium, in my opinion.
All right, Fort. How does a clubhouse full of men come up with a home run sausage celebration?
It's a bunch of boys. That's why.
Little kids.
We were children. When you're playing a game that's considered a game, right? They don't say play ball, right? Or work ball. They say play ball. And I think a lot of times when you're playing that for your sense of understanding of who you are, maybe you're playing it for your identity, you're playing it for your paycheck, it absorbs you instead of just going out and play the game you loved as a child. So these guys find little things. Last year it was a a fishing vest and a fishing pole. And this year they obviously caught a sausage, roasted it, and put it in a package. It's outstanding. I think it keeps the game fun, and I'm sure MLB will try to take it away because it's a sausage or any other sort of kosher product because it's not peanuts or not what they want.
You can't have fun.
No fun, sir.
What is the strangest celebration you were a part of throughout your baseball career?
I don't know if I can actually talk. Mel, part of anatomy.
Yeah.
It was called
like a sausage.
The Big Dick Award. Yeah, it was a Big Dick Award. We got it after the game. It was presented to us by a veteran. It was absolutely hilarious every single day.
The veteran would present it to you in the locker room?
Yep.
Oh, that's amazing.
What was it?
Was it the same one, or was it like a different veteran that was nominated every game?
It was a piece of male anatomy, and it was held up high like a sword.
Wow.
I love this. Yeah. The home run sausage and then that award. That is
amazing. You couldn't have drawn up that question much better. And I didn't even tell you.
Was this like minor leagues or with the Pirates?
No, this was with it was in the minor leagues.
Okay.
Yeah,
did you have to keep it in your locker, or what did you do?
Yeah. Usually you had to hold on to it for a day. So yeah.
Michael, are you gonna bring this tradition to the Johnstown team or the team that you own?
I will not be bringing that.
Oh, that's a shame.
That's pretty good though. Yeah.
I'm surprised.
We'll come up with something good though.
I'm surprised you don't have it on your trophy case in the background.
It's a shame. Yeah.
Well, Chad kept begging for it. So
Now that definitely is the home run sausage.
I'm the winner of that award emeritus. I get to keep it on my mantle. So I got it. Hey, the Houston Astros aren't going to be winning that. I'm trying to think of the right segue. They're not going to win that award anytime
soon. Speaking of big dicks.
They are 10 games under 500 right now, Michael. 9-19 on the season. I asked you about them earlier. I said they're going to figure it out. And there's a lot of season left, but they're 10 games under 500 and single-digit win total right now. What do you make of these early struggles for the Astros?
The leader matters is what I make of it. I mean, you look back at the last couple of years, they've always had a really strong leader, Dusty Baker, everybody else. I don't really know what's going on behind the scenes, but a lot of times the thing that's not talked about is the thing that's probably most important. People making decisions, you know, the leadership group, how is the emotional morale inside that clubhouse? Because they still have that ability, still have talent, they still have guys putting up numbers, but there's a lot of kind of disconnect. And there's a lot of different, I guess, chirps of what's going on, why it's going on. And the reality of it is, it's the Houston Astros. It shouldn't have mattered. I mean, they've been that good. They've been able to overcome a lot of different things. And one of the worst, scandals in the last 5 or 6 years, maybe decade, you know, when they were got caught stealing signs, they were able to bounce back and be really, really good that year. So they've been able to handle a lot. So it doesn't really make sense if it's just, they're not playing good. There's a lot more going on, and I think it'll come out in due time.
So let's go from the bottom of a division to the top of a different division. Are the Chicago Cubs legitimately the team to beat right now in the NL Central?
Long run, yes. Cincinnati is the scariest team in the Central. The Pirates have a chance if they can put some things together. But yes, the Cubs did everything I just talked about incredibly well. They go out and get the manager they want. He goes and gets the guys that he needs around him. He's not a guy with ego, so he doesn't feel like he has to have yes men. He actually wants guys that can thrive and tell them the truth. And then they also made some other great hires behind the scene and enhanced that ability to play on the field. So they really did a great job of kind of making sure that this could last too. And I think that needs to be warranted when it's done. A lot of times everybody just wants money to be spent. These guys did it in a different way, and they're doing it in a great way.
Michael McHenry, the very honest Michael McHenry, with home run celebrations, big awards always, and more here on Hot Mic. So how does Major League Baseball and Nike come up with these uniforms, and it takes until April 29th for some announcement to be made about how it's going to be changed with all the players? Within clubhouses, what's been the reaction to these uniforms, which are, largely hated across the league, right?
Yeah, and it's Nike, though. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is they're going to figure out it's a conglomerate. They've been always more into the basketball. They even took over their uniforms not too long ago. Majestic's kind of been a staple in baseball for a long time. Under Armour tried, didn't work. Majestic's right back. Then Nike jumps in and takes over. And I just think it was way more than they thought it was going to be. Baseball's completely different. The turnover is completely different. The amount of players is different. Everything is completely different. And we play on field. We play on dirt. We play on turf. We play in different environments. Everything's different when it comes to how you make those jerseys. So, yeah, it's one of those things. I think they just bit off a little bit more than they could chew, but they're going to figure it out. Now, I think the players were just frustrated because it is their career. They have to wear the jerseys. And it was kind of weird. The pants thing threw me off big time because it doesn't match the jersey. The pants of the jersey don't match. They used to do it by sizing where you actually got fitted for your pants. That's not how they do it anymore. It's small, medium, large, extra large. So it's a different animal. They did some, you know, adjustments that they saw fit, which I think will work in the long run, but did not work at the beginning.
But I mean, uniforms in Babe Ruth League, they can get it right. You know, like to me, it's not hard to get this right from a baseball perspective, is it? If you're Nike?
No, not if you actually talk to somebody in baseball. But a lot of times decisions are made by people that never touch the field. And that's a problem. I've seen that firsthand many, many times. You know, being in Johnstown, a lot of people have made decisions for Johnstown's baseball, have never even stepped a foot on the field. And it's tough. And they're not trying to make a mistake. They just don't know. And sometimes it's because they're overwhelmed. Sometimes it's because they don't have the right information. Sometimes it's because they got lied to. It's a lot to take in and it's a lot to take over, especially if you say, oh, I got it. I got it all. Instead of saying, maybe I don't got it. Maybe I should ask some guys that wear these uniforms, try it out a little bit more. I don't know their process, but I do know in spring training, we were yelling to the rooftops how bad they were. And it took a long time to say, you know what, maybe we should make a change.
So speaking of those making decisions, how about the guy with the Marlins trying to explain sabermetrics and his thoughts behind catching? Here they are.
To evaluate the moves that you made in the offseason thus far, the players you brought in, your evaluation on those?
I can confidently say that it's too early to have a strong evaluation. I think that we've seen some positive things with guys like Calvin Poche. We've seen some players that I'm confident are going to improve based on what they've done so far. But at the end of the day, we have to remember it is not even May yet. And the worst thing that you can do is evaluate players too soon and come to the wrong conclusion.
Do you feel that the catching position will need an upgrade at some point? It's, you know, bottom barrel in Major League Baseball right now.
I think it's very fair to say that our catchers have struggled. I think both of these guys have track records to suggest that they're going to bounce back. Both of these guys have a lot of talent, especially defensively, especially with our pitching staff, a lot of the things that don't show up in their statistics.
Michael, if Brad Pitt played Billy Bean in Moneyball, who plays the role of this guy?
That is a great question. And I don't
Not
know
Brad Pitt.
If I could think of anybody off the top of my head.
What do you think?
The dude who played McLovin?
Yeah, there you
probably.
Go. That's a good one.
Pretty good.
What do you think when you see this, and how did baseball get to a point where they're hiring people like this?
Well, my question is to you guys is, where's Kim?
Yeah.
Where's the female GM, right?
It's interesting that this guy's out there taking questions, right?
Yeah, and then Kim gets fired in the offseason, and this is the person that's there. They went from a playoff team to one of the worst teams in baseball. And my question is, what was the problem with the winning, and why is Schumacher, who has been a baseball steward and loves the game and is hard-nosed, pulled a guy off the field, which I absolutely loved the other day for not hustling, you know, getting scrutiny, and actually he's not going to get his contract picked up next year. But these are the guys answering the questions. That's tough. And he's not answering anything.
Would this happen under Derek Jeter's watch?
I don't think so. That's why I think Derek Jeter's not there.
Okay.
Yeah, he had a lot of strong disagreements with ownership about the direction of that franchise. They're 6-24. They got the worst record in the game right now. The Rockies are 7-21, but a crazy bad start for the Marlins. Top of that division, my Atlanta Braves, best record in baseball right now.
Let's go.
And they lose 2-1 last night in their first game out in Seattle, bottom of the ninth, upper deck home run, wins it for the Mariners. But I'm very confident in this Braves team, especially considering that Acuna, Austin Riley, and Matt Olson are really struggling right now, and they continue to win games. That's a good sign, because I feel like those three guys will get it going again at some point, Michael.
There's without a doubt, they're going to get it going. When they get it going, they'll carry the team, and the team can kind of just ride behind them in the wake of what they're creating. Because those three guys offensively can absolutely take over a division. They could take over a month. It could be 2 months. We saw Acuna take over an entire season. It's just a matter of time. The fact that they're winning shows that when you put the right recipe together, you put the right guys together when it comes from the staff all the way up, and they're all trying to have one collective goal, it works. You know, these guys know where they stand. They know who they are. And guys coming off injuries are jumping in and absolutely dominate. They have one of the worst minor league systems in all baseball. They made trades this offseason where they traded guys grabbed the salary, took on the salary, and traded off the guys to get the guys they needed. It was like poetry in motion this offseason, doing what they did to solidify some of the areas they had to solidify and make sure that when these situations did happen, they were able to impact the game still. And that's crazy, crazy good on their part to understand, hey, we don't have it figured out. This one guy's not going to, you know, make it all work for us. We're going to have to make this collection or community of people to win this year, because last year didn't work the way we wanted it to. Great job.
I can hear Tyler back there yapping as I asked that Braves question. His Guardians are 19-9. They're one game behind the Braves, even after losing 2 out of 3 in Atlanta. I would be remiss if I did not ask Tyler's question. You mentioned, Fort, this is a really bad division, but with the Twins on their run, 4 of the 5 teams now above 500 in that AL Central. Are these Cleveland Guardians for real? And is the AL Central maybe a little better than we thought earlier this season? It's still in April.
It's on the rise. There's no question about
that.
There
you go, Tyler. You hear that?
It's on the rise, and Cleveland is the team. If I'm in that division, I'm terrified of for a long time, because Terry Francona is looking down and mentoring Stephen Vogt, one of the best baseball minds, in my opinion, around my age in the game. He's wanted to do this for a long time. He's had ideas. He's been one of the smartest guys in every room he's been in, even as a player. So Stephen Vogt's going to lead these men into greatness, because he's going to give them an opportunity to be great. And everybody there, you look at their leadoff hitter, who seems to be a ninja and doesn't swing at anything. You look at Carrasco, he's elevated his game. And the Naylor brothers, you know, the Bash brothers of sort, have been absolutely phenomenal. These guys are playing a little bit above, maybe even they think they can play. I would hope not, but their ceiling looks higher and higher because they have a lot of people around them that believe in them.
So I think Ohtani has 8 or 9 homers maybe at this point. Chad showed me a homer last week. How fast was it off the bat? Because it went to the second deck.
I mean, it was like 117 off the bat or something. And it was on its way up as it went out of the park.
Yeah, it was. The camera couldn't follow it. Can you explain what that means, 117 off the bat? What it takes to do that?
So a normal average, on average, throw in all of those, throw in Stanton, throw in Judge, so the hardest balls hit all year, which 117 is the hardest hit this year. The hardest average is 122.2, I believe, somewhere in there. That was O'Neill Cruz a couple years ago. You're talking about a ball that's hit, and I mean, honestly, I've seen guys jump.
Yeah, the O'Neill Cruz was like a line second drive base too, right? That wasn't a home. Yeah. I feel like his, which was the fastest recorded, was on a line drive, not a home run.
It was not a home run. You're correct.
I remember watching that play.
The lower the angle, the faster it's going to be. And most of the time you see 114, 115, it's on the ground.
Yeah.
But when you hit a ball like that on the air, it has so much spin. It creates such a life to it, almost like you're hitting a 3-wood down the fairway. It doesn't look like a golf. I mean, it doesn't look like a baseball. It looks like a golf ball. It's remarkable. And he can do it consistently. He'll do it again this year. He'll hit 114, 115, and you're going to see maybe 10 guys touch 115 this year. Maybe a total of 10 one time. This guy could do it almost every at bat if he catches it flush. So that's how special he is.
So is this like hitting or running like a 4.25/40 where you can't teach speed? You can't teach this swing to this precise, perfect swing?
Yeah, there's a whole mixture of it, right? So like it's like taking a guy that runs a 6.2 and he happens to be 6.4. You know, it's like he's got the whole physique too. So, I mean, you're talking about putting it all together in one package, which is, you know, why he's a freak and why some of these guys are a freak. Because Stanton could do it as a circus event all day long.
Right.
So could Judge. But Ohtani could too. But Ohtani seems to be able to do it more consistently, and he's staying healthy too. It's been a show of sorts watching him kind of figure out how to get better and better.
The total package.
Yeah,
McKinley.
Like the sausage.
Just like the award. You
the winner of the BDA, we'll call it. BDA winner.
BDA winner, total
package.
It's
his very own EGOT, the BDA.
I love the fact that you answered it, Mike. Like, thank you.
Yeah, I mean,
love the honesty. That's awesome.
You're the man.
You're right. Yeah. We just it's bar talk, and it's hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, that's what a locker room is like.
Was it like a suction cup on your locker? What was it?
No, it was a carry around. It was carry on.
This year's lifetime award winner of the BDA is Michael McHenry. No, well done. Wow. Well done. Yeah, good job. Good job.
Thank battery, you, good sir.
Batteries
Thank
included.
You.
Batteries included.
Talk to you next week.
All right, see you guys.
Yeah, there's the
see
fort. Ya. The Fort McHenry. Always great. Chad, great show today. Fast-paced show.
Different show, but fun.
Tomorrow?
I hope the people like it.
Hope to be joined by Trent Dilfer. Clay Travis will join us as well. Plenty of headlines, news, notes, and more.
That'll be different, too.
We start when? Tomorrow?
We start at 4 o'clock Eastern Time, 3 o'clock Central. You can find us wherever you find podcasts, and you need to do it immediately. Goodbye, everyone.
Outkick.com/watch tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern. Hot Mike with Evan Withrow.